Okay.
Attention. Attention. Midday news. Prime Minister. Congressman, the Congress Subcommittee on African Affairs, his attorney, according to Senate Bill 1437, any counsel that he receives, those counsels would be guilty of crimes of conspiracy for association with a criminal. This is how U.S. democracy works and West German democracy works, that is patterned after U.S. imperialism, which is democratic in name only. It's true that the vast majority of Germans are hostile to these terrorists, but who could believe that lawyers would be necessarily supporting the crimes of revolution that they're charged with, which we do not consider crime. Revolutionary action is the only hope for people oppressed. It was the only thing that brought results to the people of Watts and in Newark when they resisted. Black unity and solidarity and resistance brought some changes. Passivity brings nothing. The more you turn the other cheek, you run out of cheeks. You can turn both cheeks of your anterior and your posterior, and still the hockey would beat you into the ground. A lawyer should defend a man or woman against the crowd without constraint. When this freedom is obstructed, democracy as a whole is threatened in the United States and Germany, even if a majority of my compatriots don't understand this yet. True indeed. Namibian officials of the foreign ministry are meeting in Washington to get guarantees of their independence and security from any further designs of the Union of South Africa. French forces have been sent to Chad, C-H-A-D, look it up on your map, because the Marxist and Socialist Liberation Forces of Chad are about to bring about a liberation of that country. And indeed, that is not about to be tolerated. It's amazing how U.S. can send its puppets like France into Chad and then have the hypocrisy to complain about the Soviets and Cubans assisting the Ethiopians in their defense. Now USA is trying to trouble Eritrea. Eritrean guerrilla activities have been attempted against Ethiopia, and U.S. aid is being poured into Eritrea. Nonetheless, Cuban assistance and Soviet assistance is increasing in Ethiopia. An Ethiopian government warns that if this condition continues, they will invade Eritrea and annex it, as well as they will Somalia, if the aggression by U.S. imperialism and Egypt continues. Stand by. We are encouraged, as I said, by the developments in Afghanistan that have overthrown the military dictatorship. Soviet MiGs helped bring the downfall of the military regime. The Air Force united with the socialist and communist forces in the liberation of Afghanistan from the fascist dictatorship that had controlled Afghanistan for the last several years. In Zimbabwe, the Patriotic Front has made new gains. 20 new miles of territory belonging to the people that the Zimbabwean Patriotic Front, under Robert Mugabe, Marxist-Leninist leader, and Joshua Nkoma, the true representatives of Zimbabwe, or Rhodesia as known on your map, have gained that much territory. Nigeria is in a state of unrest as students are rioting in the streets, demanding rights, participation, democratic participation in the government of Nigeria, the oil-rich nation of Nigeria. Morocco is having a great deal of student unrest in its cities and all of its universities. Threats by the dictator, the king of Morocco, to close down their universities is imminent. Western Sahara. The maneuvering in the Middle East has become so intricate that countries far removed find themselves drawn into the whirlpool. When President Carter met with King Khalid, Khalid, in Saudi Arabia, one topic under discussion was the Western Sahara, where Moroccan troops are fighting the Algerian socialist-supported Polisario, P-O-L-I-S-A-R-I-O, independence movement with Saudi subsidies and American weapons. When Algerian President Boumediene, B-O-U-M-E-D-I-E-N-N-E, arrived in Moscow following a Mideast tour to strengthen the front of intransigence against a Sadat-Begin agreement, he also suggested it was time the Soviet Union supported the Polisario Front. Algeria is now joining the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact. Frozen out of the Middle East peace negotiations, the Soviet leaders decided to show they could not be ignored with impunity and decided to Boumediene's request by declaring for the first time their support for a rapid negotiated settlement of the problem of the Western Sahara by the exercise of the right of self-determination of the people. As always, the Soviet Union, the vanguard of liberation, indeed the vanguard of Marxist-Leninism, are always on the right side of liberation of black people and poor people the world over. Within 2 weeks, the United States government, monopoly capitalism, neo-fascism, responded by feeling out members of Congress on the possibility of new arms shipments to the dictatorship in Morocco and a revision of the treaty which bars the use of American arms outside Moroccan territory. USA is always accustomed to violating its own laws when it suits the interest of big business. The King of Morocco, a murderous dictator, currently honors this treaty with all the respect President Johnson and Nixon gave to the Constitution as they made their war plans for Southeast Asia. But the anticipated change in official U.S. fascist policy will be seen as a reward for Moroccan support of the Sadat-Begin talks. However, it is encouraging to note that Egypt's Prime Minister Sadat is very greatly disillusioned as the Congress, under the influence of Zionist fascist Israel, is trying to hold back on Carter's agreements to send ships, planes, and other material of a military nature to Saudi Arabia and other Arab League nations that have been reasonably supportive to U.S. imperialism, including Egypt. It looks like there'll be no aid. This is causing Begin difficulty. Israel now is having great difficulty with Egypt because Egypt feels betrayed by the USA. Glory, hallelujah. It would also indicate publicly for the first time that the United States is opposed to a Western Sahara state. That is, Western Sahara being free from the colonialism of the Spanish. The domination of fascist Spain. The converse of the Soviet position, which is a position of liberation. This is admitted by Time magazine, that the Soviet Union finds itself always on the side of liberation. When Time magazine can admit it, then you know the value of the Soviet Union to people's liberation the world over. We haven't made any decisions yet. Theodore Wilkinson of the State Department U.S. Morocco's desk told the Times, we would like to help the Moroccan regime, but this does not mean we are taking sides in the dispute. Like hell it doesn't. Despite this assurance of neutrality, there are no signs that the Carter administration has considered arming the Polisario movement as well. The Algerian people's government that overthrew the domination of capitalist neo-fascist France is unlikely to retaliate against the American decision to support its Moroccan fascist enemy, since the billions of dollars it has invested in liquid natural gas plants will be worthless if the Carter administration continues to hold up permits requested by the American gas importers, which they are doing now, trying to bring Algeria to their knees. Stand by. Newsweek ran a little ahead of reality last issue in saying that the Argentine government won a victory before the World Court in its dispute with the Chilean fascist junta that was put into power by Kissinger and the CIA, U.S. planes that openly murdered the great doctor, medical doctor, president, elected by the people of Chile, Dr. Allende, whose sister, Laura, spoke in our San Francisco temple, a gracious woman that had cancer and was only given weeks to live, but is still going strong, and you know who prophesied that would be the case. Anyway, Newsweek was a little premature in saying that the Argentine government won a victory in its dispute with the Chilean fascist junta over three southern islands. Argentina's military regime would like to bring it up before the court, but the Pinochet fascist government of Chile is happy to accept the international arbitration decision of last May, which awarded all three islands to fascist Chile. The Argentine leaders have rejected the arbitration award and mobilized their navy to encourage Chilean flexibility. Even capitalist fascist military dictatorships like Argentina and Chile cannot get along together. That is the contradiction that is beautiful for international liberation movements, socialist and Marxist-Leninist. Capitalists lust after each other, just as Japan upholds its import tariff barriers and its protectionist policies, which is weakening the dollar every day. There's even talk in the economic circles of U.S. capitalism, their assistance, their aids, the 24 member capitalist nations of OECD, that there will have to be a new currency to replace the dollar because of the dollar's falling in value and the high degree of inflation that makes U.S. workers' life almost impossible to endure. Capitalists do not look after one another. They cut down each other's throats, as without any exception we see, as with Aldo Moro, Prime Minister of Italy. The government is still absolute. It will not release any prisoners. Not one prisoner will be released for the safety of Aldo Moro, Prime Minister, fascist capitalist, big money man representative who served big money well for five terms. But his life, though he's only in his 50s, is not worth the release of one black liberationist or socialist in the world. By the way, the Red Brigade today shot down the owner of Fiat Motors, one of the big capitalist corporations of Europe. They shot them in the legs. This is their policy. The deputy prime minister was also shot yesterday. The owner, executive of Fiat, large automobile corporation and supporter of fascist causes everywhere, legs were shot out from under him by the Red Brigade. He will likely not walk again. Yesterday, the deputy prime minister of capitalist neo-fascist Italy was shot in the same manner in Milan. And the executive owner of Fiat was shot in Turin, Italy. The Red Brigade continues its campaign of guerrilla activity against the entrenchments of monopoly capitalism. Anyway, the Argentine leaders have rejected the arbitration award and mobilized their navy to persuade Chilean flexibility. In response, a Chilean flotilla was dispatched to the area. United States officials are working frantically behind the scenes to cool out this dispute over their two puppet fascist regimes who are fighting amongst themselves when they set them up to try to kill off black liberationists, socialists, and people working for working class solidarity. So the United States imperialists are working behind the scenes to try to cool this dispute over three frigid little islands in Lower Patagonia that don't have any value at all, fearing that any war which disturbs access to the Straits of Magellan, an important trade route, would cause wavering senators to decide that the U.S. should hold on to all of its possessions, like the Panama Canal. On the advice of Israeli advisors, Chilean military strategists have been directing their military forces towards short, fierce wars. Even so, their forces are unlikely to prove a match for fascist Argentina. Fascist Chile and Argentina should be exactly alike because they're both puppets of U.S. monopoly capitalism, but they're warring amongst themselves. Bravo for the working class people. In a longer conflict, both dictatorships might be the losers, since their internal opposition would certainly use the opportunity to rise up against them. Stand by. this has given you some idea of a brief news commentary and where we stand at this particular moment in time in current news. There's still a team of investigators studying the Himalayas to see how much radiation will pour down on India, which could affect and endanger 2/3 of the entire Indian population of nearly 1,900,000,000 Indians, because it is suspected that U.S. nuclear sensors that had an accident will actually drain the radiation into the Ganges River, the so-called Holy River of India. Beautiful. That's the kind of thing we have constantly going on, constantly going on. No thought for the people. There wasn't even consultation with the people. No consultation at all. No consultation with the government. The United States seems to be able to feel that it can do what it wishes with people of color all over the world. European news agency services in England have brought out that CIA are still using mind control experiments, causing people to commit murder and forgetting that they have been used. This has been proved in their ultra mind control experiments that are still being conducted, according to the London Times. It is brought out that less than 1% of the population, according to the London Observer, owns the United States. What makes capitalism practically synonymous with democracy, according to the 9th grade civics text, is that corporate ownership is spread out among millions of ordinary people, so-called. The stockholders, so-called. Stockholders vote on corporate policy, just as citizens vote on government policy. In corporate mythology, the stockholders were usually described as widows, orphans, and retired shipping clerks. All fascist propaganda, lies. In a modern variation of the same theme, management expert Peter Drucker made a name for himself by pinpointing unions who invest their pension funds in stock as the real owners of corporate America. Fascist Monopoly Capitalism, USA. A recent report from the Senate Subcommittee on Reports, Accounting and Management lays to rest these myths of economic democracy. According to the study initiated by the late Senator Lee Metcalf, Democrat Montana, power to vote in U.S. corporations rests not with unions, not with scattered individuals, but with banks, a few banks. Voting power over 122 of the nation's largest corporations is concentrated in 21 bank executives, less than 1% of the United States population, and other types of investment institutions, led by Morgan Guaranty Trust Company and Citibank. Morgan itself is the major stock voter in 27 large corporations and is among the top 5 voters in 56 leading corporations. According to Metcalf, who died under rather mysterious circumstances, Senator Metcalf, his subcommittee, the power of the top investment institutions is steadily increasing because of the rapid growth of the pension funds they manage. Currently, $140 billion worth of stock is owned by pension funds, a figure which is expected to double in 5 years and again by 1986 if U.S. capitalism can continue to last and get through a nuclear war or a total economic collapse. It was the enormous growth in stock ownership by pension funds that gave Drucker, author of The Unseen Revolution, the idea that the United States was evolving towards pension fund socialism. He argued that through their union pension funds, the workers were gradually buying up the means of production from the capitalists. But it is erroneous, thus carrying out the first completely legal and bloodless socialist revolution, which is ridiculous. What Drucker left out, and the Senate report makes very clear, is that though the pension funds may be owned by the unions, they are managed by the big banks of monopoly capitalism and investment institutions of this conglomerate of multinationals that have brought terror and bloodshed from South Africa to Vietnam. When a union turns its pension fund over to a bank, and that bank in turn invests the money in stock, it is the bank, not the union, that controls the stock votes. The unions are not getting more power over the corporations. Michael Locker, president of Corporate Data Exchange, according to Time Magazine, a non-profit research organization which did much of the analysis of the subcommittee study, told Times. It's the other way around. What we are seeing is a reaccumulation of capital by the banks in the worst form of neo-fascist monopoly capitalism ever seen in USA. Already, a few unions are taking measures to turn their pension funds into political clout. Leon Davis, head of District 1199, the National Hospital Workers Union, announced last week that his union's pension fund could no longer be invested in any manner that can financially assist, aid, or support the present fascist regime that's upheld by the United States government and the big corporations in the Union of South Africa. Banks who handle the union's money will have to comply, or the union will take its $236 million pension fund elsewhere, and 1199 spokesman told this in a news conference in U.S. in Washington. Today, the machinist union, headed by progressive labor leader Bill Winsinger, wants to see unions exercise their stock voting power on a variety of issues. We could be pressuring companies to get out of South Africa. A spokesman for the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers told Times, are using our votes to bring companies like J.P. Stevens into the 20th century of reality of liberation of oppressed peoples. These are small unions and no way represent solidarity of the working class, but encouraging signs at least that some people are thinking. One of the big 21 investment institutions, Citibank, has voluntarily given up most of its stock voting power to the real owners of the stock, though it retains the power to advise the owner on how to vote. But Vic Reinmeier, staff director of the subcommittee which prepared the report, was not optimistic that other banks would follow suit. You can't expect someone who has some power to just give it away, he told Time Magazine. If we are going to restore any semblance of economic democracy in this country, and he is doubtful that fascism can be avoided in USA, we'll have to have legislation to force the banks to pass control of their votes to the actual stock owners. But the information in the subcommittee's report suggests that even the semblance of economic democracy will require much more than a fair system of stock voting. There are extensive board interlocks between banks and the capitalist corporations whose stock they own in fascist monopoly USA. And these interlocks give those banks considerable influence independent of stock voting power. For example, Morgan Guarantee is the top stockholder of General Electric, and two members of the Morgan Board of Directors sit on GE's board. Citibank, that has its tentacles in all of Africa, resisting liberation and bringing about tortures with their money in conjunction with the U.S. CIA that our tax dollars supported, is the second largest stockholder in GE, and the chief executive officer of Citibank sits on the board of General Electric. Cozier yet are the interlocks among the top 21 banks and investment institutions themselves in USA fascist monopoly capitalism. According to the subcommittee staff, Morgan Guarantee is stock voter number one in four of its New York sister banks. Citicorp manufactures Hanover Corporation, Chemical New York Corporation, and Bankers Trust New York Corporation, as well as Bank America and the Bank of America Corporation. In turn, the top stock voters in Morgan's parent holding company, J.P. Morgan and Company, are Citicorp, Chase Manhattan Manufacturers, Hanover, Bankers Trust, and Rockefeller Incorporated. America's so-called economic democracy bears an unmistakable resemblance to old-fashioned fascist oligarchy, the rule of the rich. So that is what Time Magazine has to admit really owns America. Thus ends the news and commentary and some food for thought for this Thursday afternoon about the ruling class of monopoly capitalism that spreads its ugly tentacles around the world, attempting to stifle liberty. But we are glad that at this moment Afghanistan has had a successful revolution and that the government of the people has won and become pro-Warsaw Pact and pro-Soviet. Thank you and all my love. Of its members and the public. We belong, and I am a member of the Guyana Council of Churches. And the Council has called on member churches to study the proposals in the bill. When the bill was put to the vote, it received support from all 34 PNC, People's National Congress members, that are in the Parliament. Now, it's interesting to note that only do we see the positive side on the front page. We get Dr. Jagan's position on page 11. And it receives, as I said, all 34 parliamentarians' support. And the two in the United Force parliamentarians voted against it. Dr. Jagan had an hour before he staged a walkout after a 100-minute speech in which he waxed worn and appeared frenzied at times. It may be the classic tool of propaganda for an organ of the PNC, which the Guyana Chronicle is the paper of the government, to print things on a back page knowing that people do not read long. They read only the front page and don't continue a long, heavy article. We will not be guilty of that vulnerability. We will think, and we must think, and you may even find other motives. It is a strange situation. Nonetheless, in a troubled Guyana where the PNC is not the majority, but a minority, where East Indians do outnumber, and the PPP ostensibly outnumbers the potential of the PNC in vote getting, it is strange that the Guyana Chronicle has decided to print any of the opposition's position, as you will see as I continue. Dr. Jagan accused the PNC of wanting to rape the Constitution and said the PPP will not be a party to this confounded damn nonsense. This is a travesty of the rights of the people. According to Dr. Jagan, the ruling party was planning to postpone elections and or reconstitute Parliament by nomination of representatives from various organizations so it would be weighted in favor of the People's National Congress. He said, stand by, Dr. Jagan said he was challenging the People's National Congress, ruling party of the government, to give any instance where the existing constitution has been a check on anything it wanted to do. All this talk about the constitutional change being necessary for a socialist Guyana is a lot of poppycock. I challenge them to say, said the Guyana Chronicle, in what way, with the amendments they have already made, is the constitution an obstruction, Dr. Jagan said. The opposition leader of the PPP, People's Progressive Party, Dr. Jagan said, the PNC's record did not warrant it being given the carte blanche power which it was seeking under the bill. The ruling party had further given several undertakings in the past and had not honored them. We say, stand by, that now is the time for the people of this country to understand that this PNC regime is interested in perpetuating itself in power, he said. Remember, this was said, this speech and his performance was made the exact day that Dr. Burnham was leaving for the Soviet Union. United Force leader Felden Singh, which is a moderate capitalist group, very small, doesn't represent even 2% of the population, said his party was clearly opposed to the bill, since according to him, it was a departure from the understanding at the 1965 constitutional talks and was against the Constitution. He denied what he said were slanderous suggestions that the heavily entrenched provisions in the Constitution had been inserted to please the United Force, claiming that the draft by former Attorney General Sonny Ramphal had taken by the PNC to the conference. He charged the ruling party with evading the taking of specific issues to the people. Now this is opposition from the right wing, United Force. charges by the opposition were, however, firmly denied by government ministers who spoke on the bill on behalf of the PNC. Energy and Natural Resources Minister Hubert Jack, who's visited here, black man married to a white woman, very friendly to us, ostensibly, he's now in the Soviet Union and North Korea with Dr. Burnham, declared that the opposition was aware that a society in the throes of transition, change from capitalism to socialism, found it necessary to change the Constitution, and in each case, the constitutional changes reflected a new stage of development. According to him, the PPP was making all sorts of fantastic suggestions about the ruling party's doorstep meetings, such as that the PNC was soliciting proxy voting and that the Constitution was being framed for 10 years and would be backdated for 5 years. Now, this PNC doorstep meetings that the opposition are making accusations about are not in any way soliciting proxy voting, because our people are involved in the PNC in Georgetown and they're not doing it for that purpose. They're just acquainting them with the goals of the government and the need for strong and vigilant efforts to avoid waste and for just general support of PNC goals. How much more fantasy can we get, said Dr. Jacks, Hubert Jacks, the Natural Resources Minister. Is this the thing that is going to be told to the man in the street to confuse him, he said. The government did not expect that the opposition would give a carte blanche, the word is C-A-R-T-E, and second word B-L-A-N-C-H-E, that means a full clearing to anything the administration did. But almost every occasion, Dr. Hubert Jack said, when the government was about to take some serious step, instead of sitting down and discussing calmly with each other and looking for some method of accommodation, the opposition took the opportunity to create confusion, he said. Instead of a swinging match, the people should keep in mind the advantage of the nation from what was to take place. With its two-thirds majority in Parliament since 1973, the PNC government could have changed several of the entrenched provisions in the Constitution, but did not, he said. That shows the PNC is either principled or concerned that it does not have popular people support. Anyway, we have nothing to concern about. We are our support, though we have been loyal to the PNC. The point was emphasized by Attorney General and Justice Minister Dr. Mohammad Shahabuddin, who accused the opposition of hysteria and irrational fear, which he said prevented them from noticing it. By the way, Justice Minister Dr. Mohammad Shahabuddin is also in the Soviet delegation. Such provisions constitute, in a real sense, the kernel of the Constitution and could have been exercised, but were not, he said. I find it strange, by way of commentary, that if the nation is really as troubled as people say, if there isn't some kind of understanding with the opposition, that is, on the part of Dr. Burnham, the PNC and the PPP, and with the Soviet Union, it would be a dangerous time for him to leave the nation. Or, indeed, does he have assurances from other quarters? It should provoke your thinking. That's why we're here. Under such turbulent opposition, with all the opposition walking out, and the head of the opposition, main opposition, upsetting the parliament chair, table, and desk, throwing his papers around, it's a very difficult time for a prime minister to leave, and he has canceled in the past other visits, intended visits, to not only non-socialist countries, but to socialist countries alike in the last minute. The issue should be, said the prime minister, whether the bill constituted a legal, acceptable method of changing the Constitution, and it could not be faulted on that issue, he said. Dr. Shahabuddin focused on whether or not there should be a referendum procedure for the changing of entrenched provisions in a constitution, reminding that what the bill was seeking essentially was to remove such a procedure and replacing instead the two-thirds parliamentary majority. This is what the people are upset about. They want the people to decide changes in their constitution, which is healthy unless you have indeed a strong one-party Marxist-Leninist party that is open to self-criticism, that does have interaction and opposing views within a Marxist framework. This is my commentary. According to Dr. Shahabuddin, the referendum procedure imposed a too rigid constraint and the two-thirds majority struck just the correct balance. The referendum requirement was not in the Constitution of Ireland, India, Trinidad, and Tobago or Barbados, said he. It would have been technically competent for the government to introduce a new constitution outside of the procedures set out in the existing constitution, he argued. This has been done in Ireland, where the parliament resolved itself into a constituent assembly and adopted a new constitution. If the intention of the government was to be as vicious as the People's Progressive Party opposition make it out, it would have put in a new constitution in a different way without being hamstrung by the existing procedures. They could have put one in technically now because the PNC has two-thirds majority in the parliament, whether there by rigged elections as accused by many people throughout the world or not. They could have done it. They have the actual power to change the Constitution because they have more than two-thirds membership of the parliament. But the PNC did not. Maybe it's all a ruse. Maybe they didn't even intend to do it. At least it's been tabled because the Prime Minister did not, Dr. Burnham, before he went to Moscow, did not decide to even talk on the subject and said it was tabled for the time being. But there was suggestion that there would have to be an election if there's anything to be done about it between June 10 and September 10, as I said. And we were approached the next day as to how our vote would be. And then we said our support would certainly be forthcoming, but we did want certain matters resolved once and for all. Anyway, if the intention of the government was to be as vicious as they, the opposition, make out, according to the Guyana Chronicle, remember this is a Guyanese PNC view because the Guyana Chronicle is the organ of the government, it would have put in a new constitution in a different way without being hamstrung by the existing procedures. The government does not seek to wrest power from the electorate, that is the people, by popular vote, but is going directly to the electorate, the people, for popular vote to put the bill to them, confident that it will prevail, he said. Well, we shall see. If they were very confident, or totally confident, they would probably not have come to us asking us to vote, which is not in the one sense legal to do so. One jailed, one freed in arms cases. One of the two accused in the Abley firearms and ammunition case, suspected to be the starting of some counter-insurgency or revolutionary activity, has been freed. Strange that they do not deal very severely with people who have arms in this country. Of course, our arms are licensed. The second, who was found guilty of having unlicensed firearms and ammunition and in possession of firearms, was sent to prison for 1 month to 1 year. Justice Rudolph Harper imposed the penalty on Maipal Motilal, East Indian, 19, and Justice Harper is black. They're not even coming down on East Indian opposition with arms. It shows that there is great concern about dissent in this country and not to anger the dissent too much, it would seem to me, and I'm open to your input you can bring to me in the radio office, any views you have. Moreover, it shows a need to keep solidarity and a great room of freedom, which they've allowed the opposition leader to commit a violation of the law by tearing up the parliament desk and table and throwing it over on the floor. Anyway, Thurmohan Sukra, 45, who was charged jointly with the offense, was found not guilty, in keeping with the jury's recommendation for mercy. Of course, the jury here may go one way and the government another. The government takes strong positions by assuring us things that they technically cannot do except by a referendum, but they have given us special concessions. They've bypassed their laws. They have guaranteed the return of people who would attempt to leave our community to cause disruption or disturbances. They have guaranteed to increase their force to protect our people from outside attack. Nonetheless, the people in general, when they're brought to trial these days, do not face heavy sentences on matters of the most serious crime, such as having arms and ammunition unlawfully. State Prosecuting Counsel Wilton Edwards had urged the jury to accept the story that the two men were arrested and charged with the offense on February 14, 1974, as a result of a police raid. It's taken that long, and they've been out on bail since, for it to come to trial. Stand by. Vance defends Carter's arms policy. Secretary of State, Mr. Vance, in critical talks in Moscow that don't seem to be yielding anything as of the news of this moment, is stating that the arms race will lead to nuclear war unless there is some agreements through mutual and balanced restraints. And this is his central element of the U.S. policy. He says, under seven presidents, Democratic and Republican. State Department officials said Mr. Vance's speech was aimed at countering domestic criticism that the administration was focusing on arms control at the expense of giving up adequate defense, as there's an increasing right-wing mentality amongst the U.S. amongst the U.S. populace. It also attempted to counterbalance a speech by President Carter in North Carolina, which was very hawkish or warlike, which sharply criticized the Soviet Union and was sharply rebutted and criticized in Moscow for its warlike tone and stress on aggressive military arms. There are clear limits to what we should expect from arms control, said Secretary of State Vance, but it's equally clear that arms control pursued in a deliberate and measured way will contribute significantly to reducing the prospect of nuclear war, which hangs over us ominously, Mr. Vance said. This is why I believe so strongly that our security is best protected by policies of strength in our national defense and by practical arms control agreements that limit the dangers of nuclear war, which we must respond to urgently, as there's grave danger of nuclear war on so many instances of world confrontation. I'm cutting it short. Stand by. We should be testing our water. We should boil water if there's any question at all. We should be testing our water. Medical team, this must be a part of the routine standard. Now again, I want to remind you that it's important that we have the most advanced and intense security. We have a guest arriving tomorrow, thus necessitating a people's rally, agricultural meeting tonight. We've fallen back in agricultural production, and we have to have one anyway. Occasionally, you actually were in a brief white night this week, though it was one. White nights don't necessarily mean that They were serious, not by any means of the magnitude of our 7-day war. But it's important that you realize that any guest that comes in, you do not speak to them, you do not try to gift them anything, because nothing will get out anyway. We will be very closely observing that. You do not try to undertake discussions unless asked to. It's also important, again, to realize that we are asked to participate by both the opposition and the PNC, the Trade Union Council, the head of all unions in Guyana. In fact, they have helped our cause by purchasing shirts through us, which aided our cause some $13,000, which we needed desperately, because we need to look to every way of making money and every means of saving. Anyway, we will be marching, and we will perform, and we must have a float, so you need to be working on that now, those who have artistic talent. We also have an invitation to make a few $100 the night before at the Pegasus. It is a limited number. No one can go in who has any danger of police record, that could be kidnapped and taken back to a trial that could clearly be proven against them, guilty of any past crimes. Anyone, of course, can be framed. So that will mean that all of you will have to stick very, very close together if you are selected to go in. We have checked on the matter, and it appears that in the actual confederacy of the conspiracy, where they talked mercenary hiring, we do not have the family, although they're no doubt in the background, because they were quite willing to do what Stone wanted done, to have Brian Bouquet put under court order. They were quite willing to do what Stone and Neversaw personally asked them to do. But I know you say you have to have him. You can't have John, because John, for two reasons. He cannot go because Stone made he and Ken Norton a particular victim, in that they had some past situations that he attempted to utilize, and we will not forget them. Secondly, John, the doctor, and all lab people must spend the time, which will go along concurrently, with this famous researcher into cancer, Dr. Walt, who worked with Dr. Papp for many years and is bringing us all kinds of medical equipment, if it will be able to get through customs, as we are now, we must negotiate, by the way, over the radio, that he will be here showing us how to test for every kind of cancer and to know how to do those biopsies and pathology and so forth. So you're going to have to look through your musical group and see if there are any others. I don't remember if there are any of you that have anything that could be picked up in legal records and used against you, but that will have to be gleaned by our legal department. Thus, requested so far are Marthea and Diane. That's all that's been requested, as well as the band. We do not know if there'll be any more or not. We will let you know. If you are picked to be in the march, you must be sure that you at all times stay with the group, because Billy Oliver Jackson can tell you how many close attempts he had. They actually came into our yard and looked over him. They stopped a vehicle on the road to the airport and decided against it, though one of them had a gun, went through the entire vehicle. It would have been easy to have abducted him, taken him a quarter of a mile, and taken him out by sea. So you have to realize the severity of these possibilities. We are up against mercenaries who, by the admission of the press and by a personal statement of George Hunter, publisher of the Akiah Journal, we know that the front person for the hiring is Lois Ponce's husband. We know, however, that all the rest of them, Stone, Myrtles, Neva, the whole mess, Maria's dad, the whole relative bunch,